So, morning everyone.
Morning.
Nice to be here, joining in your Sangha Day celebrations. So, Akasha Rogers asked to give me a talk. So, I'm going to talk for hopefully no more than half to three quarters of an hour. And the topic he gave me was Sangha and commitment, or commitment and Sangha. So, I was thinking about what to talk about, and, you know, various sort of Buddhist ideas came to mind, but it all seemed a bit dry and wasn't very inspired by that. So then I thought, what I need is a story. I need a story. Maybe I could tell my own personal story. And I thought about that for a while. And again, for some reason, it didn't quite kind of grab me. Couldn't quite kind of get into that. And then eventually what came to mind was an image, a metaphor or an image. So I'm just going to talk about this image and a few reflections around it, and we'll just see where it takes us. Yeah. So the image is of a forest. So you've got to imagine you're alone in a forest, and it's dark, and it's rather constricted. There are all these kind of vines and creepers that kind of block your way. So there's this feeling of constriction. You can't really see the sky. Sometimes there are thorns that scratch you. Maybe sometimes there are insects that bite you. You've even heard that maybe in some places there are tigers that might eat you. But in another way, it's okay. You know, you know, there's nuts and berries, and you can survive. I mean, actually, over time, you've got quite good at surviving. And you know, sometimes it seems like the forest's, it's all right. It's okay. I quite like my bit of the forest. Maybe it's okay being here after all, yeah. But other times you dream or imagine about something beyond the forest. Maybe there's another land beyond the forest. And it's a land of fields and lakes and valleys, wide open valleys and high mountains. And sometimes there are cliffs where you can stand and gaze out into the blue sea, beautiful golden beaches, sandy beaches, and there's the huge sky above you. So in the daytime you can feel the sun on your skin, and it's light and spacious and open, yeah? And at night time you gaze up into that sky, you can see millions of stars glittering in the darkness. So yes, you have this sense of something beyond. And you wonder, could I get there? Could I experience that other place, that other land? Yeah. And as it happens, in your place in the forest, there are a few paths. One goes off that way, but another one goes off that way. And then there's another path going in that direction. There's various paths that go off in different directions. Yeah. So for a while, you check out these paths. You go just a little way down each one of them. You sort of peer down them as far as you can go, as far as you can see. And you try to kind of partly guess, partly intuit, partly kind of think and work out, where might that path take me? Yeah. So maybe that's quite a sensible thing to do to start with, quite valid, quite wise, just to kind of go a little way down, check things out a bit, and then come back and go a little way down another path and check that out and just kind of think and suss things out and work out what you're going to do. Yeah, that might be quite a wise and valid thing to do to start with. But one day it gets to a stage where you realise you've got to decide what you're going to do. You've got to decide what you're going to do. You could stay. But, you know, that's your choice. You could stay in the forest. You don't have to leave. You can stay in the forest if you want to. Or you can decide to try and go and try and find if there is something beyond. But if you're going to go, you've got to choose a path. Yeah, it's no use. After a while, it's no use going 100 yards down one path and then coming back, and 100 yards down another path and coming back. You've got to choose one of those paths into the dark forest. You've got to kind of follow it through and see where it goes, see where it leads you. Yeah, that's the choice that you've got to make. That's the decision that you've got to make if you decide that you do want to leave the forest. Yeah. And if you don't do that, if you don't choose one of those paths, well, you'll never learn anything. Yeah, you'll never get very far, and you'll never learn anything. Yeah. Whereas if you go down with your eyes open and your head screwed on, you may make mistakes. You might need to make adjustments. You might need to change direction. But you can learn, you can adapt, you can evolve as you go. Yeah? So maybe you decide, okay, I'm going to try and escape the forest. And you choose a path and off you go. Yeah? And of course the nature of this is that you don't know where that path is going to take you. You really don't know. You don't even know if there is a path out the forest. Maybe there isn't. Maybe the forest just goes on and on and on forever with no end. We really don't know. Yeah? That's actually the situation we're in. Yeah? We may have intuitions, we may have ideas about it, but right now we don't absolutely for certain know. So it's a risk, yeah, it's a risk, it's a challenge, but we decide we want to try, we decide we want to kind of explore, try and discover, and so we kind of go forth, we set out along a path in that forest, but with our eyes open and our head screwed on. Yeah. Willing to learn as we go. So of course that's a metaphor for our life. Maybe the forest is our mind, tangled up, sometimes dark. Maybe it's a metaphor for samsara. Yeah. And you know, we don't have to get out, but maybe we want to. Maybe we have this sense of something beyond the forest, some better possibility, some realm where there's more light, more space, more freedom, and so on. Yeah? And yeah, in a way, the obvious point of the metaphor is that if we want to try and escape from the forest, sooner or later we have to choose a path. Sooner or later we have to make a commitment, and that commitment is essentially a commitment to something unknown. Yeah, that's just the nature of it. That's just how it is. It's a commitment to something unknown. Yeah, we just have to plunge into the forest, but we do so, yeah, willing to learn, willing to adapt, willing to make mistakes. And if we're willing to make mistakes, then there's the possibility of learning and adapting and evolving, becoming wiser and more aware of where the way out of the forest may lie. Yeah. So that's the image of us in the forest, but in a way it's an incomplete metaphor. It's an incomplete image. Yeah? It doesn't completely reflect the nature of our situation. Yeah? Because actually, in another way, we're not alone in a forest, are we? Yeah? I'm sitting in a room full of people. My life is surrounded all the time in many different contexts by all sorts of other people. Yeah, I'm not just alone in the forest, all by myself. Yeah, maybe both sides of that are true. Yeah, there is something, isn't there? There is something about human life. There is something about our human existence, which is essentially, fundamentally alone. Yeah, we're born alone. We will die alone. You know, only I know what I think and know what I feel and know what I experience directly. I can talk to other people about it, but only I know it directly. Only you know what you think, feel and experience directly. There is just something inherent in the human condition which is essentially alone. Yeah? Therefore we have to make our own decisions. We have to live our own life, yeah? I can't be dragged out of the forest. Yeah, I can't be dragged out of the forest kicking and screaming. Leave me alone! I want to stay in my nice forest! Yeah, it just doesn't work like that. It's just not the nature of things, yeah? We have to make our own decisions. We have to live our own life. We have to make our own commitments. And so on, yeah? There's something about human life which is essentially alone. At the same time, there's something about human life which is essentially connected. We are connected and conditioned by so many other people so much of the time. Yeah? We're influenced by all sorts of social contexts, all sorts of people. Yeah? Completely profoundly, right from birth, right through our whole lives. We're intimately connected in all sorts of ways. Yeah? Probably far more deeply and profoundly than we even realise. Yeah? So there's something about human life which is also absolutely, essentially connected. Yeah? To be human is to be connected to others. Yeah? In many, many ways. Yeah? We're social creatures. We learn through observation, through imitation, through being with others. That's actually how we learn to be human, to do anything at all. Yeah. So to come back to my metaphor of being in the forest, yes, we're alone and we're also connected. Yeah. There was actually a book written by a Buddhist writer some years ago called Alone with Others. Alone with Others. It was exploring that whole theme of aloneness and connection. It's a good title, isn't it? It kind of says something about what it means to be a human being. We're all alone with others. Yeah? So if I'm going to come back to my metaphor, I need to expand the metaphor a bit, or expand the image, fill out the image a little bit. So there I am in the forest, and those various paths going off in different directions. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? There are paths. How did those paths get there? Yeah? The path doesn't just appear by itself. Yeah? Those paths must have been walked by other people. Yeah? There must have been other people who went that way before me. Yeah? So once I start going down that path, even if I can't see them, I'm following in the footsteps of somebody or maybe more people who went before me, yeah, who've trodden that path in advance of me. So maybe I start going down that path and for a while I feel a bit alone, although at least there is a bit of a path to follow. But then eventually I come across, it kind of opens out and it joins a bigger path. And there are loads of people walking along. All kind of walking along, talking, sharing the journey. Yeah? I mean, just imagine that. Imagine you're in this dark forest, really a bit kind of lost and unsure, and suddenly you meet loads of other people. Imagine the relief. Imagine the joy. Yeah? There are other people. Yeah? And you go up to them and you talk to them, and it's incredible. They're also trying to get out the forest. They also want to see if there's a way out of the kind of darkness and constriction of the forest, yeah? And you tell them, you say, look, I've come from over there and I've been trying to do this and I've been trying to kind of get out of this, and they understand what you're talking about. They can kind of, they say, yeah, that happened to me too. I can relate to that. And you're able to tell your story. You're able to kind of communicate yourself. And through being able to communicate yourself, you feel like you can be yourself more fully than you were able to before. So imagine the relief and the joy that you feel. So you start travelling together, and, you've all got different skills. You've all got different strengths and weaknesses, but now you can help each other. Now you can support each other. Now you can learn from each other. Yeah? You can all kind of develop different strengths based on the strengths that are available amongst you collectively. Yeah. And you start to notice that you feel much, much more confident. Much, much more confident. I mean, imagine going through the forest alone, day after day. I mean, most of us, the voices of self-doubt, it wouldn't take long, would it, for those voices to be there. You don't know where you're going. This doesn't lead anywhere. It's a waste of time. It would take incredible discipline, incredible conviction, incredible courage to kind of go it alone, yeah? Whereas when you're with others, you can kind of get a sense of faith and confidence and conviction much, much more kind of easily, yeah? Just as a little aside, I remember asking Sangharakshita once how to develop faith. His answer was very short and simple. He just said, be with others who've got faith. That was the end of the answer. I was expecting a bit more than that. That's all he said. Just said, be with others who've got faith. Yeah. If you're with others with faith, it kind of rouses and sparks off and encourages the faith in you. It's caught, not taught, as we used to say. Yeah. So there you are. You're on this path with others now, and you're travelling along together. And after a while, you start to feel committed to your fellow travellers. Yeah. Some of them have become friends. Some of them you don't know so well. Some of them you may not even like very much. But that doesn't seem to matter so much, because you know that really they're trying to kind of get the same place as you. You know that really you can kind of help each other and support each other on that path. Yeah. And of course it's not easy. But nevertheless, you feel a commitment to them. You feel you want them all to kind of make it, yeah? You want them all to kind of, together, find that way out of the forest, as it were, yeah? And you care for them, yeah? You want them all to kind of progress on that journey, yeah? And of course, once you're in that situation, I suppose that's what my argument is once you're on that path with others, and again, you've all got your head screwed on, and your eyes open, and you're all willing to kind of learn and adapt, both individually and collectively learn as you go along. Once you're in that situation, it's so much more likely that you'll find a way out of the forest. It's so much more likely. You've got much, much better chance, yeah? Because there's so much common experience and common wisdom and common awareness that you can kind of draw on, that you can kind of impart to each other, yeah? So you've really hugely, massively increased your chances of finding the way out of the forest, yeah? And it's also more likely that the other people behind you, maybe even way behind you, it's more likely that they'll find a way too, yeah? Because all of you are walking down that path, and what are you doing as you walk? You're keeping the path open. You're making that path. You're treading that path. Yeah? And you leave behind you a kind of much kind of clearer path for others to see, for others to follow. Yeah. I remember when we had the international retreats at Taraloka, you'd start off with a big field. You'd put up various tents. And then on the Friday night or whenever it was, people would turn up. And, you know, there'd be hundreds of people kind of living together for a weekend. And at the end of the weekend, there are all these paths. Yeah, there'd be a path from the shrine room to the dining room. There'd be a path from the dining room to the tea tent and to the washing up tent, yeah? All these little... You could just see. It was like a kind of little record of where people had gone, where people had travelled to and fro, yeah? Town planners call them desire paths, don't they? Yeah, where they lay out a public area, and then you get people decide, actually, I don't want to go there, I want to walk here. And you get a path across a grass verge, which shows where people really want to go. Yeah. So, yes, we make paths. Yeah. So that's something to think about, isn't it? If we now, we're treading a path together, and by doing that, we're kind of opening it up for others. We're creating something that other people can come along behind and think, oh, look, there's a path down there. And, you know, we open up the way for others. Yeah. And, of course, you've got to keep walking it. Yeah. In a way, it's the Sangha. It's the commitment of the Sangha that kind of keeps that path of the Dharma open. Yeah. If the Sangha stopped walking that path, well, probably even within a few months, the grass would have grown over and it's not quite so obvious. And certainly after a year or two, all those creepers and tangly things would have grown, you know, the brambles would have grown over, and not long after that, it'd be very hard to discern any path at all. Yeah. So yes, we make a path by walking it together for ourselves and for those that come behind us too. So, there we go. That's more or less my little reflection on Sangha and commitment, my little image that kind of crystallised in my mind. Just to say one or two more things. So in Tri Ratna, in the Tri Ratna Buddhist community, we have two main ways in which people make a kind of public commitment to practising the Dharma, to treading that path, to trying to find their way out of the forest. One's becoming a mitra, so two people are going to become a mitra, become mitras later on today, which is fantastic. So, and that will be explained later on, so I'm not going to say very much about what that means, but it's basically you've decided you're a Buddhist, you've decided that that Buddhist vision of what lies beyond the forest is what you want to kind of follow to the best of your ability. You've decided you're not just going to, it's not just a kind of theoretical idea, you're actually going to try and walk that path as best you can. You're going to kind of practice as best you can. Yeah? And it's also a commitment to a certain Sangha. You're saying, okay, I feel at home with these people that are walking the path in this way. I want to be part of this Sangha. I want to kind of travel with others in that kind of way. Yeah. So we have what's called becoming a mitra, and then we also have ordination, which is another, in a way, even stronger commitment. When what ordination represents is the person being ordained saying they really want to put the three jewels at the centre of their life. That's the kind of main thing around which all the other different aspects of their life are kind of organised. Yeah, that journey to try and find the way out of the forest, that's the kind of defining, absolutely defining motive or commitment of your life, as it were. Yeah. So we have these, yeah, in Tri Ratna we have these two ways in which people can express a commitment. People can kind of say, I want to tread this path, I want to find if there's a way out of the forest, as it were. And it's really important to know that it's up to you. Yeah. You decide. Yeah, only you can decide, actually. I remember when I asked for ordination, I can still remember it really clearly. I mean, it was about 25 years ago now. I can still remember posting the letter. You know, you put it in the slot and then you let go. It's done. You can't get it back. You've done it. Yeah, I can still remember where I was. I can remember the letterbox. But I also remember the run-up to deciding to ask for ordination. And I hadn't been that involved that long. So I sort of knew that I wanted to ask for ordination. But I thought, you haven't been around for long enough, so maybe you should just wait for another year and then see how you feel. And then if you still feel like this, you can ask for ordination. Yeah? And then about 2 weeks later, I thought, I still want to ask for ordination. Maybe I'll just wait for 6 months. I was like, okay, just 6 months. And then if I still feel the same way, I'll ask for ordination. A couple of weeks later, I still feel the same way. I don't really want to wait for 6 months. Perhaps I'll just wait a month. Yeah. Anyway, what happened was, I think a few days after that, I realised, I just want to do it. Yeah? And I decided to ask for ordination. So my point of that story is you'll know when the time is right. Yeah, just trust your own judgment. You'll know when it feels like that's what you want to do, that's what you want to explore, that's what you want to commit to, as it were. Yeah. So you have to decide. It's your choice. It's your spiritual life is your responsibility. Yeah. So that's the alone aspect. There's an alone aspect. Yeah. In terms of ordination, we talk about the private aspect of the ordination. Yeah. But there's also a public aspect. Yeah. There's also a kind of with others dimension to it. So yeah, when we So partly there's a with others dimension because you're committing to a certain sangha. You're committing to kind of practice with others, to travel with others and help others and be with others. And yeah, in a way that's symbolised by the fact that we make these commitments in a ritual. And it's a public ritual. So we're going to witness one of those later on today. Yeah. So certain people publicly make a commitment. That's quite a strong thing to do, isn't it? That's quite a strong thing to do. Yeah? But there's a reason for that. I think saying something or expressing something, actually in the Mitra Ceremony you don't need to say anything. It's just done by making the offerings. You express it by making the traditional offerings. Yeah? But I think doing that deepens it. It has an effect. You're doing it in front of others and with others witnessing you and supporting you, and that kind of can deepen it. Yeah, you might not feel that straight away. Sometimes people do feel it straight away. Other people, they just feel that later. But I think it can have that effect. Yeah, and the rest of us are witnessing that. That's really important too. Yeah, we're with them, we're behind them, we're supporting them. Yeah, and all that helps to deepen it and make it more real. Yeah. So yeah, there's the kind of with others, the kind of public dimension of these rituals and of making a commitment to. And hopefully what we feel is, yeah, joy and happiness and maybe relief. And I was on an order weekend last weekend, actually, with one or two people here. And the theme was ordination. We were looking at what ordination means. And at a certain stage in the weekend, there was a reading. It was a reading from Sangharakshita talking about his own ordination many years before. Because I'm living an itinerant life at the moment, travelling around with a rucksack, I haven't got my books with me. And that meant I haven't been able to find this reading, otherwise I would have read it. But it was very strong and very moving. And he was talking about being ordination. And I think it had taken him a few years to get ordained. There were various complications trying to find a monk who would do the ordination. Anyway, eventually he was ordained. And what he described was a feeling of belonging, a feeling of acceptance, a feeling of deep peace. Yeah. So I sort of imagine for him, he felt like he was now really on that path, really fully on that path. And he knew that ages before, it was the Buddha on that path, and he was now really, fully, truly following in the footsteps of the Buddha. So maybe I'll end up in there with that sense of kind of belonging, acceptance and peace, of knowing that you're with others following in the footsteps of the Buddha. Thanks very much.